And our goal and our recommendation, and we did get some legislation or we did get some action, but I don't think it was ever totally implemented throughout the state, but our strong recommendation was to have one form to which all levels of government would agree that their questions would be included, and so people could then, you know, fill it out in more than duplicate and submit them almost simultaneously to various levels of government so that you didn't have yourself blindsided 6 months or a year later by another level of government coming in and saying something else was required. It still, in my estimation, is far too complicated in Oregon, and as one who's now spent 6 winters in Arizona and building, developing homes on some lots I bought down there from the proceeds of selling some Ocean View property that I've had going back to 1961 with my mother and my brother. I can say that other areas of the nation do a better job on building permits than we do in Oregon. But it was another worthwhile endeavor to try to simplify government, to try to reduce the bureaucracy and the paperwork.
Which definitely is a good idea.
I hope so.
Okay, next, let's talk about the state hospitals and building chapels there. Give me your view on that, please.
Well, one of the things that, as a member of the old Board of Control, which later got abolished, with my help, and that was a mixed blessing. We had some chapels. I remember there was one up at Fairview for the mentally handicapped, or mentally challenged, I guess is now the terminology, but there was no chapel at the state hospital. And this seemed very strange since it was one of the big institutions. And there was no attempt, obviously, to combine church and state, no attempt to raise or to use state money. And as a member of the Board of Control, when I was Secretary of State with the governor and the state treasurer, I felt it was not appropriate to head up such a drive for private funds myself. But the hospital wanted, the head of the hospital, by the way, who starred in that movie, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which they did at the state hospital. He was a fellow Episcopalian and was interested in having a chapel there. So it seemed logical to have my wife serve as chair of a private fundraising effort to raise some money to put a chapel in the hospital of a non-denominational sort that could be used by the patients or even the staff for private prayer or for people to come in from outside to conduct services. And that was something that I was very proud of Elizabeth for doing. It followed her work prior to my going into state government, even though we lived in Multnomah County, of her chairing the Washington County Mental Retardation Fund drives a couple of times, and her work at the Perry Center, and her work with Girl Scouts, and her work in other areas. Obviously had the support of the governor on that, and we achieved that. The Board of Control, running all of the state institutions from the time of statehood up until kind of mid my service in the Secretary of State's office when we got it abolished, was a fascinating human rights experience over and above my other activities that we've discussed with the Welfare Commission or the Youth Commission in a totally different field than the official duties of Secretary of State or later State Treasurer. But again, it was a great service on the Board of Control, was a great complement to the kind of, and used a lot of the learning experiences I'd had in working on Multnomah County or state welfare, or in my other activities as Chairman of the Governor's Commission on Youth, when you're dealing with the state penitentiary, the state correctional institution, Fairview, McLaren, the former Hillcrest for girls, the state hospitals in Portland and Pendleton and the Dalles, et cetera.
What about abolishing the Board of Control? Why was
that
done?
I mentioned a minute ago that I thought it was a mixed blessing, even though I was probably the person most influential in achieving that. You had the three constitutional officers, in addition to all of their other duties. The state treasurer as chief investment officer and on the land board, and other duties that the treasurer had with the investment council. The governor supervising the whole state really couldn't give that much attention to state institutions. The secretary of state as auditor of public accounts, the only state in the nation where the auditor is also secretary of state. Lieutenant governor now, my Canadian friends say lieutenant governor. And running elections and handling all of the state filings and the other duties assigned to that office, it didn't seem to make much sense to have three politicians trying to visit every state institution several times a year, that it might be better left to the professionals. You ought not to have politics involved in the management of state institutions, and sometimes the elected officials would be running against each other for the same office of governor, secretary of state opposing a state treasurer, et cetera, or one of them running against an incumbent governor. So it made sense to the three of us on the Board of Control to recommend the abolition of the politicians and to eliminate one of several layers of supervision, and to then also combine and to try to have better financial management control of the institutions on a unified basis rather than each of them being their own individual fiefdom with their own head. So we recommended the creation of a Department of Human Resources, in effect, to bring together all of these disparate state institutions and administer them through one group and get rid of the layers of direct leadership of each institution reporting to three elected political officials. We thought we'd get rid of two levels of administration and replace them with one. Needless to say, my mixed emotions on the subject are because of the greater bureaucracy that was built in the new Department of Human Resources. I've learned that sometimes when you cut off a couple of heads of a hydra-headed monster, there's a bigger monster grows with more tentacles, and we might have done that. We got it passed a quarter of a century ago in the legislature, in the House, with a fair margin as I remember. I think we got it passed in the Senate on a 16-14 vote. And I believe I was instrumental in the swing vote. There was a moderate Republican from a reasonably conservative area of Eastern Oregon, Senator Gordon McKay, was a friend of mine and had been a supporter of Tom's and of mine. And Gordon really raised a lot of the reservations that I have since come to agree with. But he came in to visit with me in the Secretary of State's office and in effect said, "Clay, these are my reservations. I know you and Tom advocate these. Would you please respond as to why you're supporting the bill?" I did. He switched. Senator McKay voted. That was Gordon. It was an earlier Senator Doug McKay, who was later governor from Salem, but this was Gordon McKay from Bend. Gordon switched, voted for it, gave us the extra vote we needed. The Board of Control was abolished. The Department of Human Resources was established. And in retrospect, I'm not sure that was one of the stars I would like to have in my state service crown, to be remembered as a major contribution. I would rather talk more about land use and welfare reform and youth commission and election law reform and audit reform and investment improvements and 101 other subjects. But we did it. The Board of Control no longer exists. And it really was an anachronism. I'd still like to figure out how the state of Oregon can improve both its land use planning with that bureaucracy of LCDC and its human resource services through the Department of Human Resources.
You say simplification sometimes.
Well, it's the same thing I'm proposing to Democrats and Republicans in Congress right now since they screwed up the tax reform this summer on the national level of 97. They did a lot of great things that I think reduce or eliminating the tax up to a huge amount on selling your home and reducing somewhat the capital gains tax to encourage people to turn over their investments. And why do you tax inflation of 20 years ago? It ought to be indexed. You know, I've always advocated a simpler, fairer, flatter tax. But I have yet to see one proposed that makes sense. When you try to simplify, you know, what was it, this Forbes guy who ran for president, wants what he calls a flat tax. Well, what he proposes wouldn't even tax him. And he's a multi-millionaire. And it wouldn't be flatter because people with low income pay what? Their employer and themselves pay 14% or so in Social Security tax, which gets wiped out in the 60-some thousand-dollar income range. So in effect, you have a tax reduction when you make more money if you had a flat tax. But people get catchy phrases, and I like simpler, fatter, flatter, fairer taxes, and I like simpler, less bureaucratic government. But it's in the application that you run into the problems that have to be resolved. And what has impressed me in years past are the governors and members of the Board of Control that we abolished, or the land board, who really worked in a bipartisan way to solve problems instead of the simplistic, wrong-headed Bill Sizemores who try to tear down government without understanding it or knowing how to administer it. Sorry, I got off on two sidebars, federal taxes.
On state hospitals, what kind of changes did you see or participate in concerning Fairview?
Well, Fairview, of course, was where you had people with mental handicaps, the mentally challenged, we used to say mental retardation. And when I first started visiting Fairview with Tom, and then we would also go up to the state hospital in the Dalles in Pendleton, and you also had many of the people with the same challenges there, I was so impressed with the loving attentiveness that these people would pay to you. They would follow you around, they would hold your hand, they loved Tom McCall, big imposing figure, and he would hold their hands and walk with them and so forth. And you would find different levels of abilities, and it seemed to us that many of those people, just as we used to incarcerate many people in the state hospital for life who could live out in the community, we've probably released far too many, and that's why you have so many homeless people on the streets now with so many problems. So again, the pendulum sometimes swings too far, but at that point it was obvious to us that many of these people did not have to be incarcerated for life in the hospital at Fairview. And I remember speaking at the chapel some years later to the first graduating class of Fairview students who were going out to get jobs in the community. And just as I had worked for halfway houses for youth and ranches for them, and worked for halfway houses for those released from the penitentiary and the correctional institution, so that they wouldn't just come out with $50 and have to commit another crime to live, but could move into a halfway house. It seemed that we should do that with those with manual dextral abilities, with enough knowledge and ability to care for themselves, dress themselves, clean themselves, to work at some jobs. And so I worked aggressively to establish such halfway houses. I remember giving a dedication speech at the first one in Northwest Portland. And one of the young men lived there, I later ran into at the Multnomah Club. And he was working in the kitchen, and he was just as happy as he could be. He had a job, he was self-supporting, the state was no longer supporting him. You know, he would never really be able to live totally on his own. But the joy and the light in their eyes when you see the opportunity to learn to work. We had other places where they would assemble, manually assemble wooden products, metal products, do other things such as that. And that's really one of the great joys in my public service, is remembering the reforms that we brought about in Fairview and the people we were able to return to productive lives and much happier lives in society.
What would you do, you think, with those folks that have been, that we find out on the street now, that probably, when you mentioned the pendulum, probably mm-hmm. swung too far?
Well, it's like anything else. We too often, to solve a problem, go too far in the other extreme. What I have tried to do is to work primarily with churches. For those people, I think when Liz and I in recent years lived in New York when I was working with J.P. Morgan, our poor little parish in Ardsley, New York, St. Barnabas, we would drive down every Friday night with coffee, and I can't say that we did it every Friday night, but our congregation did it, this poor little congregation. One of our great joys was taking coffee and blankets and socks and clothing and sandwiches to distribute on the steps of a very wealthy Episcopal parish, which was not doing anything for the homeless, St. Thomas's Church in New York. You know, that was, we were kind of rubbing salt in the wounds of our own church. I think of what we did at Trinity Parish, a very wealthy congregation in New York, of which I was not a member, but it's the only Episcopal church I'm familiar with where you do not have to be a member of the congregation to serve on the vestry. And I had 7 elected terms on the vestry of Trinity Church, Wall Street. And we had homeless programs. We built a place, a facility to house 100 people at night. Right next to a very fancy, exclusive restaurant, which sued us and tried violently to keep us out of the neighborhood. And once we worked with them to not have people on the streets, to have them when they came to our housing facility, to have them come into the facility and not stand out around the restaurant then became so impressed after they lost their lawsuit and we built our facility, that they then started giving their surplus food to us to feed. So that was an ironic, great turnaround of a New York City business. Trinity Church also, prior to that, my son, who was at Trinity before I was elected to the vestry when he moved back from Tokyo with the firm he was with, used to spend one night a month, one weekend a month, where up in the upper reaches, you can't really call it an attic, of the oldest building in Manhattan, St. Paul's Chapel, owned by Trinity Parish. And they could accommodate 14 or 50, whatever the maximum was we were permitted to have in that building. He was primarily there to make sure nobody burned the place down, a magnificent old church structure that George Washington had worshipped in. But almost every activity I've seen that's been successful has been church or community generated. I encourage those, while I bewail the lack of governmental units in most cases, to do what we used to do to the other extreme, incarcerate too many in state hospitals. And, you know, it was, I think I touched on this maybe in a prior interview, but among my early visits as Secretary of State to state hospitals with my then my assistant, George Bell, was to find out that they were taken, their own clothes were taken away from them, and they were issued muslin underwear and things that were very poor to wear. We saw one guy at the state hospital wearing two boots, both for the same foot, and they weren't the right size. Well, just as I had worked for, again with George, we worked on the Board of Control to give showers more often to the people in the state penitentiary, so we worked to get the people in the hospital to wear their own clothes, to try to restore their common humanity to them, rather than making people feel they're just...
they were a prisoner.
Yeah, a prisoner, another cog in a big machine with no rights. So almost anything you can do to encourage people to fend for themselves and help those who cannot to at least have the minimum basics. My biggest problem today is with panhandlers. You never know whether they're making more than you are by panhandling and using it for tobacco and liquor, or whether they're really deserving. So my approach has been to every Christmas give some money to the clergy people at the church to use for their discretionary funds, so that hopefully they will know where the needs are. There are a variety of answers in effect, Mrs. Nesbitt, that people can, you know, you can do. Government's not the panacea, the answer for everything, but I think it ought to be used where it can be the most effective answer and where there is a great community need that cannot be solved by others.